For December 15th, 2017, we talk about the Game Awards, Evil Within 2, and we ask you about your video game alter egos. Welcome to Level 223. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. You heard that right. Dennis is back. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, yay! I exist.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. You had several weeks of traveling for work, but we're so happy you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. I've got some stories from the road I'll share. Got my fair share of Vita time in, which is good.
Woohoo.
High five,
portable buddy.
That's right. The longer I have it, the happier I am that I have it. But yeah. I can get into that later. Yeah, I'm happy to have both my feet back on the ground in Cincinnati, snuggled down for the Christmas season.
Nice. So no more travel for you this year?
Well, I'm working on a proposal right now that if it goes through, there will be, which would be great. But right. Also, I wouldn't mind not. So we'll see.
A little bit self-sabotage.
A little bit of a mixed bag right. There, yeah.
Man, you used a lot of racial slurs in this proposal. Are you sure you want to send this over?
This is very unlike you. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. So I apologize. People are hearing my voice. My voice is devastated. We did Duckstream this past weekend, and it was a great success. It was a tremendous amount of fun. We raised a lot of money for a good cause. However, the combination of speaking for that long and also being awake for that long and just the general disruption has left me very, very ill. So,
and the amount of anxiety induced by having confetti all over your floor.
Yeah.
Oh man, the your squinchy face and then that sigh after every single time you pop one of those things. The combination of those two things made me giggle like every time without fail. The squinchy face you can see in that GIF that Allison made, but yeah. You can't hear the sigh. So yeah. You have to go see the VOD for this.
Yeah. What Jala's calling the squinchy face is me like kind of like bracing both to twist the confetti cannon, which I fired off every $500. They're kind of tough to twist, but I was also bracing for the sound, because these ones in the past, the confetti cannons that I've got have been spring loaded.
Oh, so, none of that weak shit anymore.
No. And like those were fine. I mean, Dennis, you were around when I was firing off some of those other ones.
They did do a good job coating the floor.
Yes, which is fine. These ones, I had 12 inch confetti cannons, and they were powered by compressed air. So when I was twisting those, I think what was happening, I found all these plugs laying around too, like mixed in with all this stuff. I think what I was doing was actually like almost like driving a pin into a cartridge to fire it off. Like if you listen, like that boom that you hear in like the video on demand or that you heard when you watch that wasn't just proximity to the mic or whatever. No, it sounded like a gun going off. Like I've been around guns going off. It sounded like that. And then of course the sigh is because like, all right, there we go. Cool. It's up. And I'm watching to make sure that the camera is catching it. And as I'm looking, you see all this confetti just coming down in a solid wave of sheets on sheets. So it's all cleaned up, asterisk, which is nice. The asterisk is because I'm still finding confetti from 2 and 1 year ago.
I was going to say, like, that, you know, if I happen to go back up to Cincinnati sometime next year, I'm going to crash on your couch and then I'm going to be like, hey, Cole, guess what I found?
Oh, yeah, because all you'll have to do is like reach in between the cushions and find a piece that I missed. Yeah.
The next tenant is going to be so confused when they see that living room. This guy really liked to party.
Yeah, he was a real party boy. Yeah.
Did a confetti monster live here? I don't understand.
He was a confetti tester. That's how he made his living. Yeah. So it was good. It's mostly cleaned up. People are like, oh my gosh, your Roomba's gonna your Roomba is going to choke to death and die. Like, the second the first one went off, my Roomba crawled under the fridge and hasn't come back out. I haven't been able to lure it out even with Cheez-Its. But no, you just sweep it up with a broom. You sweep it into a big pile, like you're raking leaves or whatever. Then you pick up most of it with hands. Yeah.
Did you see that thing that I posted on your Facebook a while ago that was like somebody combined Alexa with one of those Billy Bass like moving fish things?
I did. Yeah, it was the Billy Bass.
Oh my God, your Roomba needs a friend.
Yep. Yeah, no, I should just mount that on the back of it.
Yeah, that would be even better. Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, that made my day when you shared that. Yeah. So yeah. Duckstream was great. I'm just I am suffering the ill effects, so I apologize if my diminished voice is unpleasant.
It's surprisingly wonderful after being gone all this time, I can attest. So
is this what you've always sounded like, Cole?
Yeah, Cole, I hear no difference.
Cole, you've aged terribly. Oh,
but,
man.
But Dennis, you said that you had some stories, travel stories you wanted to tell.
Oh yeah, but they're all Vita related.
Oh, okay,
no,
I
was in Appleton, Wisconsin. It was boring as hell.
Oh, dang.
Okay.
And not nearly as warm.
Okay.
Sorry to all of our listeners from Appleton, but
right. Well, so Ben, what were you up to?
I was just watching the stream pretty much. So pretty much the same thing, but yeah. None of the anxiety.
Everything except the anxiety. Great. Mm. Yeah. But it snowed because, of course, it fucking snowed because I had a marathon to run.
Yeah.
So, the last time it snowed in Houston was, like, in 2004 or 2009. So, like, for some fucking reason, I was just like, sure, of course it's going to snow.
So I think you're mischaracterizing this because you're calling this a marathon. This is, like, you know how there's a Baker's Dozen? There's a Jala's Marathon, which is a marathon's worth of miles plus, like, the change that happens to be in the cup holder. So,
yeah, because I was like, okay, I ran the Brazos Bend Marathon, all right? It's a marathon is 26.2 miles, but the course was actually 28 miles.
Right.
So technically, Trot, the trail racing over Texas, tricked me into running my first ultra marathon because an ultra marathon is like any distance over a marathon distance. So I have technically run an ultra marathon. I was considering running like a 50K next April, which is about 31 miles. And since I just finished 28, I know I can do a 50K like right now because that's only 3 more miles over what I was doing. And I already had to walk that to get to my goddamn car. So like, I know, you know. I got this. So I might even do a 50 miler if I have enough time, you know, to do all the training, because that's, of course, even more training than what I've been doing.
Yeah.
So I did have some race photos on my Instagram, and I put them in the Slack for you guys. If you click on the one that has the really, really pretty sunrise, there are like 10 photos in that one. You just have to, you know, click on it, follow the link, and then swipe through. And the other one is like my crazy, they made me run my first ultra race.
these bastards.
Yeah, so but I felt fine. I mean, like, I was running with a dude from my running group who has run over 100 marathons.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, I was going slower than usual and taking it easy because, you know, stuff this whole year has been jacked. My training has been completely messed up. So but because I was taking it easy running with this dude, I got a second wind at mile 20, which is usually when people bonk and then, like, you know, hit the wall and you know, die, wither and die.
Right.
And so I just got like a second wind at that point, and I was just like, wee, I turned on my music and off I went. And then I was running most of it solo, except for when I was chatting with a lady who has run over 100 mile races. She's one of 6 people worldwide to have ever done this.
Oh, wow.
Jesus.
And so, like, because there was the Brazos Bend.
Yeah, Jesus was one of them.
But
Brazos you pretty much Bend... have to be. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 10,000 miles, so.
So Brazos Bend is basically an ultra marathon where you can do 100 miles, 50 miles, full marathon distance or half marathon distance, where you can do a 100 mile relay and have a team. So everybody does 25 miles. So those are your different options. And I did the full marathon one because 50 miles is a very long way. I was like, okay, I really am not ready for that yet. What that means is that everybody on the trail is not necessarily doing the same distance you are. So you might be next to a halfer, you might be next to somebody who's running 100 miles. You have no idea.
Okay.
So like you can just be running along, and that's why like I was talking to her and I'm like, yeah, so you're doing the 100, aren't you? I can just like I'm like, yeah, you're one of those, aren't you? And she's like, yeah, you know. And then we got into the conversation. So all the people who do ultras are both crazy and awesome.
Okay.
So they're a fun crowd of people. But anyway, what was interesting is I checked the finishing ranks, and even though I felt like I was going slow as fuck, I actually finished in the top third.
Nice.
So that's cool and totally unexpected because I was going at like lazy pace for me. So I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And my particular group that I do long runs with talked me into doing the Santa Hustle half marathon this coming weekend in Galveston. So I'm going to be racing two weekends back to back. So I'll be doing a 13.1 in Galveston dressed as Santa Claus with everybody else dressed as Santa Claus. And they have cookie and candy stations, which not that I can partake of them because I'm vegan and they don't have vegan options, but I can have like a candy cane. But that's about it. I have candy can and some water.
Yeah, so you can flood your system with sugar, thus ensuring you'll cramp. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that like you need the sugar because you burn off all of your glucose in your bloodstream, and then you start burning like everything you've got in your reserve. You have to replenish salt and sugar and calories the entire time. You burn about like for somebody my size, and I'm 5'3" and fairly small. I mean, I'm muscular, but I'm not super big. So like for my size, you can burn about 3000 calories doing a marathon. So doing a half marathon, you're burning about 1500 calories when you're out there. So, I mean, like I don't need to replenish very much for that distance of a race because I run a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
But, is it
generally advised to run two races like that back to back?
It depends on how hard you race it. If you race it, if you're racing it, as hard as you can, then hell no, you don't. But like my legs are fine. I could go for a run. I could have gone for a run today, but I had to deal with the cable guy. Oh, the cable guy. But I'm hardwired now, but it took like 2 weeks. So to get everything all straightened out with all of that. But anyway, what that means is I can stream now, which is great.
Good.
But and then also, Jala ain't just a runner, folks. You got to be welcome to the gun show. Because, one of my listeners, one of the listeners who is chit-chats with me was like, I don't remember exactly what was going on. But he was saying something about, you're just a runner or something. And I'm like, let me educate you, fool.
Let me drop some science on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll put these Instagram posts in the show notes.
I'm all over Instagram. People should just follow me there if they have an Instagram. Or if you don't have an Instagram, you can follow me on Facebook or on Twitter. They cross post everywhere. So anyway, but the race itself was cool. There was an alligator. He was just hanging out and chilling.
He's too cold for a gator.
Literally chilling. Like the thing is, when I was doing the race, the ground was frozen right at the start because it had snowed.
Right.
It was frosty, but then that meant that once it warmed up, everything got muddy as hell. So then you were hauling slugging mud, on your shoes the entire way. So,
boy.
Anyway, it was fun. It was cool. That was what I did, and now I'll be doing another one this next weekend. So, surprise.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Yay.
Yeah. So does anybody else have any stories from the past week or so?
Looking at you, Ben.
Yeah, Ben.
I think most of them are related to the stream. So I'll talk about some of that maybe in the grind.
Okay.
So I don't know. Overall, the stream was awesome though. I had a really good time with it.
I was in and out.
Well, I mean, as is very clear, you had good reason for that. Yeah. But yeah, thank you everybody who watched, thank you everybody who donated. Pretty sure we're going to do one next year. There's no reason to stop. We're helping a lot of people by doing it. And it's real heartwarming to see it.
Did you guys get a grand total yet, or
no? And there may be one up. We're going to announce it. Like, what we have to do, we have to check and see what the donation total is minus fees and stuff, because that isn't reflected in what people see on the stream itself. And then also I have to roll in the Twitch stuff and the shirts and things. So we keep it open for a little bit too, because not everybody gets paid at the same time. So we want to get at least one more Friday in there. So it'll probably be like next week by the time.
Gotcha. What have the goals been each of the three times?
We've just boosted it by 2,500 every time. So I think our first go was like 1,500, and then we bumped it up to 25 for the second year. Year three was 5,000, and then this year was 7,500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good progression. Yeah.
Yay.
Cool. So other than all that, we've got the regular kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. I'm going to try and edit out all my coughs, but if I miss them again, sorry. But why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Ben, you have the big and pressing one, and my story comes off the back of that. So why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, mine's pretty generic. I just want to talk about the Game Awards and talk about like the results and kind of get your guys' opinions on them, if you thought anything got robbed or if you agreed with any of them. So maybe just as a quick summary, I can say like what some of the winners were and maybe some of what the upsets were. Real condensed, Game of the Year went to Zelda, which also got Best Direction and Best Action Adventure Game. Best Narrative went to What Remains of Edith Finch, which I was very surprised by, but that's awesome.
Yep.
Cuphead won a lot of the indie stuff. It got Best Indie Game, it got Best Debut Game, and it got Best Art Direction. Best Music went to Nier Automata. Hellblade cleaned up. It got Best Audio Design, Best Performance, and Games for Impact. Resident Evil 7 got Best VR Game. Persona 5 got Best RPG. Wolfenstein 2 got Best Action Game. Mario got Best Family Game. And then Mario and Rabbids Kingdom got Best Strategy Game. Over XCOM 2, I would like to point out to Dennis.
That is very strange.
I weep inside. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what the... Is that? It's just player's choice, and maybe more people recognize Mario? I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
I think one that I was kind of surprised by and a little bit disappointed by was Best Action Adventure Game going to Zelda over Uncharted The Lost Legacy. I thought that game was really good, so I was kind of disappointed by that.
Zelda got a lot of nods, especially any category where Zelda was in front of in along with Mario. Mm-hmm. Zelda ended up getting it. Which I don't know. I mean, I can understand it, but I also it's always disappointing when something sweeps like that, right?
Yeah, and I was surprised too, because most of the people I've talked to who've played both prefer Mario over Zelda. So mm-hmm. I haven't found many people who have been Zelda zealots over Mario. So
yeah.
A cool story. So Melina Jurgens, who's the actress who won for Hellblade, is not actually an actress. So she was like an office assistant who they had doing stand-in work.
Oh, wow.
And while they were looking for who their lead was going to be, and then she just blew them away so much that like they kept her, which is a really cool story, especially given kind of just how intense that game is. To just kind of have the perfect person for that role sleeping under your nose is kind of cool. But if you look at the headshots for all the people who were in the running, well, they're all headshots except for hers. Which is a picture of her at her desk with all of her like gear on. So
all of the face capture stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a really cool story.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy to see the Switch doing that well, like Nintendo stuff. Like, I think they're, it's hard to remember, but like in the lead up to the Switch launching, there was a little bit of trepidation over like, is this going to be another problem for them? Yeah. Another Wii U. And like, it kind of seems like they played it right, aside from only making five of them.
just like Microsoft and every other operating system company, Nintendo Switch is like in every other console company.
Here's the sad thing is I was about to make a comment of, you know, they kind of they misstepped with Wii U and then they brought it back with, and I had to stop and I'm like, how many consoles have come between the Wii U and the Switch? Have there been any others? Like,
no.
It feels their release cycle feels like it's just a new console every, you know, 30 seconds now.
Yeah, there have not been. Yeah, this is cool. I don't know that I have anything more to add about the actual winners and stuff, but like, been a good year for games, and every year for the past several years has been a good year for games.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that it's Player Choice Awards, because then it I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? How it being like a kind of like a populist vote as opposed to like Academy Awards sort of thing or a Golden Globes thing? Not saying that that's like a great way to do it, but
yeah. Is it the case that the public got to vote on what was best?
At least according to the awards that I'm looking at, like it says closed and winner for all of them, so I assume that all of them were voted on by people.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Anytime a system is open to everybody, especially open to a group of people as passionate as gamers, you end up with really kind of shitty situations where people, you know, vote insincerely, let's say. I'm not saying like everything, you know, it has to be left to a cigar to a smoke-filled room, you know, to be the arbiter. But like this spread of winners kind of seems to track with what I would expect on this. Like, there's not anything that huge in terms of an upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
To my eyes, right? So it doesn't
except
look like
these that fighting games. I'm pissed at the fighting games. But anyway, sorry.
No, tell me what's pissy about the fighting games?
This is ridiculous. Just, no, I don't.
Injustice.
Lie. No, that's in Tekken, sure. Nidhogg, uh-huh. Come on. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is crap. ARMS is, no, it's weird. I don't know.
They were reaching to fill five.
That was terrible. Okay.
Oh, gosh.
It was unintentional. ARMS.
Okay, yeah. Really? Okay. Right. You made me facepalm. Okay, never mind.
Usually that's me. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Sorry, you would have heard me losing my shit laughing, except I had to mute to get rid of some bag rustling noises in the background. So.
Ah, yeah.
I appreciated it, Ben.
Appreciated my groan is what you were appreciating at that particular moment.
The most anticipated game presented by McCafe.
Yeah, I know. I was just okay. But yeah, like best debut indie game presented by Chic Hydro. Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, if the money's coming in from sponsorships, at least it's getting some recognition. Like you talked about how, hey, the last several years have been good for games. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's going to, I think it's indicative of the medium kind of growing up a little bit in terms of just, you know, no one is striving to decide whether or not games are going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's now a certainty, and now we're moving on to how high can we reach.
Jesus.
And there's the trappings that come along with that.
Yeah, best debut indie game has three amazing games that I played this year.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at that and I'm like,
yeah, Slime Rancher, Hollow Knight, and Golf Story. Like, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of related to what you're saying, Dennis. Like this year, the viewership of Game Awards like tripled from last year. Apparently, so apparently it's growing in popularity.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, video games continually blow all of the expectations of, you know, what their sales are going to be through the roof. Yeah. I mean, like the amount that video games are grossing, you know, just like as an industry has just been like increasing every year. So, but then again, yeah. I've been reporting on that every time. But
yeah.
There's also one category that's kind of interesting. They have best student game, where they have games like submitted from colleges. I haven't heard or played any of them. I think Jella, I think you might have played one of them from Light. Am I remembering that correctly? For some reason, that sounds okay. That sounds
no, I did not.
Reason, okay, but those look interesting.
Yeah,
it's like during the Oscars. It's always like, oh yeah, let's watch every single one of them, and then I never get to them.
Yeah.
Well, it would be me who would just, like, you know, pick up this random weird thing nobody's heard of, and that's the thing that I play. So
yeah. So the awards are only one part of this. Another reason people watch is for the reveals.
Yes.
And there were a couple that I was interested
segway,
in.
Segue.
See,
that was good.
It doesn't work when you call attention to it. you just kind of ruined it.
That's why I do.
I'm just speaking. Okay. I'm just speaking truthfully. You kind of stomped on my segue by calling it out. It's fine.
Yeah. See, I can get away with you know, saying that kind of a thing, Cole, but you're too nice to say that kind of a thing without getting, you know, with actually getting away with it.
Ah, dang. So, you know, I was joking. No. Yeah. So the reveals that were made here, there's one that
wasn't a reveal. Oh, come on.
What, the FromSoft one?
Yes, your Ooh. Thing.
Yeah, my thing. Yeah. So the story
that
wasn't
a reveal.
I mean, but like it was FromSoft acknowledging that they were making a new thing and that it will be part of a certain aesthetic. This is not going to be FromSoft in the like strictly medieval realm. This is going to be FromSoft in the bloody and horror realm. Whether or not that's Bloodborne or not, who knows? They released a 45-second teaser trailer. By teaser, I mean like strictly just a single shot of something gross establishing an aesthetic with three words, shadows die twice. This sent the entire Souls appreciating world into a fucking tailspin when it happened. This also happened during the stream, I think.
Broke the servers for Bonfireside Chat. Yeah,
I mean, something. I don't know, but like the entire weekend, we were like just stiff arming people. Like, yes, we're going to cover it on WoF. Yes, we're going to cover it on WoF. No, Bonfireside Chat's not coming back. I appreciate the sentiment, but the show's not coming back. Listen to this now.
Just tattoo it on your forehead.
Yeah. So when I say a tailspin, like there was like all kinds of videos being put out, like interpreting every frame of it for people who haven't seen it, like just go watch it. But like it shows some kind of weird rope and bone torture device. The rope is bloody and it appears to be kind of situated over top of a table covered in writing that looks a little bit like kana or kanji, something like that. I forget my ignorance there. Over some kind of Japanese writing. This has people thinking that it's either going to be Bloodborne 2, which I hope it's not. The tagline Shadows Die Twice has people thinking this is going to be related to the Shadow Tower series, which would be really crazy, actually, if they brought that back. And I'd be down for it. And then also people are thinking, hey, this might be a new Tenchu game, actually, because FromSoft did a few of those. Or it could be something new. Like, those are the four options that are out there and available to us. But, you know, we're probably not going to know much more until at least E3, right? When that comes around.
See, I just assumed that this was the new high-def version of Medieval that's coming out.
Yep, they're working with From. God, Medieval, why did they have to bring that back?
The same reason it existed in the first place, I guess.
Was anybody clamoring for more Medieval?
I actually knew somebody who their response to this multiplayer, although they did not actually post it, was a character from Medieval. So yeah, there are people out there that like it.
I'm sure they do. It's very strange to see that announced with some kind of fanfare.
So on a similar note, did you see the trailer for Death Stranding?
No, I didn't. I was not able to. I'll watch it when it went up. Same
thing. So you understand it about as well as anyone else does then?
I think probably better because I have beginner's mind about it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. People say it's crazy that they don't really know what's going on. My response would be you expected different. But you know, everybody has their own expectations about it. I'm excited. Campo Santo announced their new game in the Valley of the Gods.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's like a more traditional kind of adventure game kind of thing. Yeah. So cool stuff all around. I'm excited to see what comes of the FromSoft thing, but also Yeah. I'm excited to see what's going to come of that.
Be excited for a year.
Yeah, we'll why not? I'm curious and interested. I am watching it, and for God's sake, I need everybody to know I am aware of it. Oh, man. So that's my story. Jala, what you brought for us?
Well, you know, VR is a thing, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing. I mean, not for us on this particular show. Like, we have a dearth of VR here, but like, it's a thing. Well, there's a bunch of different models of VR headphones out there, but I happen to read an article about the tech side of things, about some of the stuff that is out currently. The iSign VR headphones came out this past January, and they use planar magnetic technology to deliver more convincing 3D audio. The article that I pulled up explains exactly what all that means, but more or less, this is a less commonly used type of audio tech that changes the way sound travels to the ear, and it gives a sensation of distance and depth and separation between sound sources and instruments. There are some other more convenient types of headphones out there, like Mantis VR is designed with clips to attach to the headband of your PSVR. And the Vive Deluxe audio strap is similar, but for the Vive. But neither of those really offer much by way of audio specifications, so they're pretty much just serviceable, convenient headphones. Mm-hmm. And there are some more types of headphones that are going to be coming out in the next year or so as well. But like the main thrust of the article was about the technology of the iSign VR headphones. And what was interesting for me is that, like, I think if I were hearing things in a more convincing 3D, like a binaural type of audio, you know, that's more convincing than like a regular standard stereo headphone, then that might push me a little bit further towards that edge of, oh, someday when I have like some kind of money, maybe I would do the VR thing as a thing, because that would be a little bit more immersive. So I don't know. I guess that's the thing. Listeners who do VR need to like tell me, what types of headphones do you use? Do you just use like standard ones, or what's the deal with the people that are in our community? Like, what do you guys use?
Yeah.
Because, you know, just the tech behind that particular aspect will change how the composers of video game music and, you know, just all the sound design in general do their thing. And so, like, that might be a thing where eventually more and more games have that, and maybe even games that do not have, you know, that are not necessarily strictly VR will have that kind of a sound setup.
Yeah.
I think that the sound aspect is becoming more, there's more attention being paid to it, because, say, for example, with Hellblade, that's a thing where a lot of people are like, you have to wear headphones, and the sound design is so awesome. And that's a thing that's coming up a lot more, you know, in recent times. So that's a thing that's interesting to me to see how that develops.
Yeah.
I just can't get over the name planar magnetic technology. Like, yeah. It sounds like it should be used to travel between worlds or something.
How right, do you know it's right. not?
I guess in a way it is.
Well, if you want me to read out, you know, yeah. the really boring technical scientific whatever, or if you want to just like watch a video about it, it's all on that article. Yeah. But yeah, like it talks about the difference between, you know, the regular stereo headphones just kind of like shoot out the sounds in directions, you know, whereas right. this particular one will shoot it directly into the ear with, you know, like more of a soundscape where they can, because it has a focused direction to, you know, how the sound hits your ear. That means that they can design, you know, the audio tracks that you're hearing to give you that sense of depth, to give you that sense, you know, that yeah. perception of, you know, distance or separation. So, you know, yeah. different sound sources and things like that, more so than with stereo headphones. Even if I'm not playing VR and have a VR headset on, just like the audio part of it would really be like, you know, if that works with just like a computer and just playing any old game, and the games have that kind of sound design, I would definitely wear the headphones just to play a game on my computer, you know?
Yeah.
So
I mean, like, all this reminds me of just for years and years living with my stepdad, who just obsesses about having the biggest possible TV. He's calmed down about it, but for a very long time, it was like, we're going to get a new TV. And they'll go out and they'll find, you know, a big, nice screen and pay a lot of money for it. Cool. It's his money. It's nice to have a thing for the house. But I would be so frustrated because then he would bring it home and he would, instead of like just having some kind of receiver or a sound system, he would get the cheapest like home theater in a box, like combination DVD and receiver kind of thing. Like, yeah, whatever. Mm. So you're looking at the screen that's bigger than God, and it kind of sounds like you're listening out of these tiny little like Logitech speakers, you know, hanging from like wires from the ceiling. It's like, please, like, this can't be an afterthought. It's half of the experience.
Yeah.
That seems like what it would be to get to spend all that money on a VR headset and then use your Apple earbuds or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. But
they're
mean,
shaped
like,
to fit my ears. How could they be bad?
They only fall out 20% of the time.
Well, even, well, you know, my whole point being, even if there are still a lot of people who don't want to get a VR headset, uh-huh. if these, you know, headphones still work with other games and the sound design kind of heads in that direction where it does have, you know, that sort of tech behind it, then that would be a big difference for me. Like, I would definitely be much more immersed in the games, and maybe the horror games would actually scare me.
You beat me to my point. Like, you're talking to somebody who loves horror games. Like, directional sound is really, really good for that.
And so that's why it's interesting to me. And I just kind of wonder, I need to look into it and see if that particular headphone is actually usable, you know, in non-VR games or
what. I don't see why it wouldn't be.
You know? But the thing is that I wonder if it actually would produce that same separation unless it's designed for, you know, like
right. Kind of
the
like
actual. Yeah.
Yeah. Games are made with the Dolby standard and like, yeah, that helps because they can just predict how these headphones are going to work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
That's cool tech stuff that I'm interested in right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sounds good. That which I mean, those those probably sound pretty good. but before Jala rings my neck, Ben, what's this Harry Potter stuff?
I have no idea. I talked about the Game Awards.
Oh, you did, Dennis. Sorry. Oh, geez.
Yeah,
I'm sick.
You are sick. So sick.
Your voice is so bad, it makes Ben sound like Dennis.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Dennis.
His voice is going, his hearing is going, it's all downhill from here.
Pretty soon I'm going to be the protagonist from the song One by Metallica. What's this Harry Potter thing?
Yeah, just a fun one. So I've been slowly listening through the Harry Potter audiobooks on family road trips. And so this was kind of front of my mind when I saw the headline. They are coming out with a new Harry Potter game in 2018 with a completely generic name, Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery, as opposed to Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, which I talked about a couple weeks ago.
Right.
the card game. Now, this is a video game. It is an RPG. And it is having you create your own student to go to Hogwarts. So this is, I guess, less of a Harry Potter game and more of a Hogwarts and kind of that universe.
The
game.
Wizarding world.
Yeah. Which instantly brought to mind, like, Bully, the video game only set in Hogwarts. And I could get down with that. Like, that sounds like a great idea. Hopefully they don't cock it up, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know, the Stardew Valley guy's doing a wizard school game, right?
Oh, is that right? No, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's his next project.
Very cool. All right. Well, we'll see which one comes out better. I'm interested to play both.
So,
and
I mean,
and should be a good time.
So this is the Pokemon Go people. This is Niantic.
No. So they are doing a different.
Oh,
Harry Potter
different
game.
One. Okay.
Yeah. So they're the only other like group to have touched Harry Potter under its most recent label, Portkey Games. And then this one, I don't know if I see who it's being developed by. But it's notably, it's, you know, you're creating your own student to go to the school, and they've been kind of mum on if the main protagonists are going to be in it or not, which, given some of the books and plays and movies that have come out, it seems like J.K. Rowling is more and more willing to diverge away from the core characters of that universe. And I think that that is the game will only be served well by really leaning into that. Hogwarts is such an interesting kind of place in and of itself that I don't think it really needs that much support from the banner characters. And yeah, like I said, Bully for Hogwarts, I can get down with that.
Yeah. I'm curious about this. It's very strange how long the legs have been for this franchise.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when the series, the book series first wrapped up, I remember J.K. Rowling being adamant that she wasn't going to be doing a ton of expansion on it.
Right.
And then it's kind of started coming out in little drips and drops, and the dam is starting to burst, I think.
Yeah.
Which I know there have been Harry Potter games in the past, and you've always played as the main characters. I mean, there's been freaking Lego versions of Harry Potter.
Right.
And, you know, but everything is centered around the main characters. So yeah. I'm intrigued to see it expand out a little bit.
Yeah. Huh. Well, hopefully this makes people happy.
Yeah. I think it'll be hard to mess up.
Yeah. Cool. I don't have anything to add on top of this.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that we ask the nice people?
Yeah, we asked, what video game character is your alter ego and why? And thanks to Secret Agent Man, or Matt M, or John D, whatever you want to call him, the Secret Man.
This really tripped me up over the weekend when that person donated.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's because it's kind of a long story, but it's my fault. We'll just put it like that.
It's I'll believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get us started here with Greg, who writes, ever since I first played the game as a 12-year-old, mine is Link from the original Legend of Zelda. He's a scrappy underdog fighting against huge odds, gets his job done in a business-like way without complaint, never gives up, uses his brain as much as his muscle, and wins against great odds. We can all be inspired by Link.
Be like Link.
Yes. Be as unto the Link. Yeah. And it helps that Link is a cipher, too. He is made to project yourself upon, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis, what does John say?
John says, obvious answer here, but Griever from Final Fantasy VIII. I already felt a strong connection with Squall as a teen, specifically his loner mentality, not his jerk-assness, and Griever is his personal spirit animal. Griever being a lion also fits since A, I was obsessed with the Lion King as a child, and B, the random name I chose in fourth grade Latin class and used for 8 years, Regulus, happens to be the brightest star in my favorite constellation, Leo.
Yeah.
Oh, your favorite constellation is my birth constellation. Woo! All right.
Yeah, Squall's a good answer. Griever's a good answer. Ben, what does Mike say?
Mike says, this is a rerun from last week, but Sam Fisher is mine. Most video games seem to feature young characters, and I like the idea of one who is super capable, fit, and focused while being canonically an old-ass man. Sam inspires me when I hit a wall at the gym and when I go to get things done at work.
Yeah, Mike is the person who last week talked about working up to the goal of doing the Sam Fisher splits between two walls in a hallway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah. We wish you the best of luck. I think you can do it. Yeah, Jello, what does Sam say?
Sam says, Aerodactyl.
Period.
That's it.
Yep.
Mic drop.
Well, everybody knows Sam is only with us because of fossil technology. Yeah. Which sounds like a dig, but it's really not. I was more just acknowledging that's where Aerodactyl comes from in Pokemon. Anyway. So Adam writes, Dante from Devil May Cry, I always enjoyed his cocky attitude and cracking jokes, keeping it very aloof. I think my favorite was in Devil May Cry 3 when you encounter the three-headed dog Cerberus, and he cracks jokes like I have never seen, like I've never seen a talking dog before. And hey, come on, let's go for a walk.
It's a good boss fight.
Yeah. See, a Cerberus is a problem because how many how many collars do you get? Like how many leashes do you have to? I'm working on my type 5 yeah. about the creatures of hell. Yeah, Beelzebub, I hardly know her. Yeah.
Less than a minute per circle, dude.
Like some of them you have to skip over. Like I'm going to, you know, like if I'm going to give lust its due purpose, I have to like just maybe like pay a little bit of lip service to Malabolge, you know. Yeah. Dennis, what does Noah say?
Noah says A2 from Nier Automata is fiercely driven by her principles, fighting on even after being forsaken by her allies. She's resistant to authority and concerned with discovering the truth. She's driven to do the right thing, even if it's pointless. I hope one day to be so selfless that I put my life on the line for a better future I will never see. Well said.
Awesome. Yes.
Yeah. I need to break down and play that game.
Yeah, I know absolutely nothing about it other than recognizing like the characters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a very distinct style, too.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, Mr. Champloo from Disgaea 3. He's a nutcase who teaches a cooking class or teaches cooking classes to demons in an abandoned school. And Champloo's head, every problem is like a tricky meal to prepare and can be solved by food. Man after my own heart.
Yeah. See, it's fun when you can take your habit of hanging out around abandoned schools and turn it into something constructive.
Well, yeah. Last week he was the one who was talking about taking martial arts, fighting games made him want to take martial arts, which made him do yoga, which helped him with his anger management problems.
So this will just make him a better cook then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jala, what does Justin say?
Justin says, Roger Wilco was always my guy, a cowardly, good-hearted fool who would eventually stumble into making the right decisions in space.
Roger Wilco is a very good answer. Yeah, because he's for as hapless as he is in the games, he's almost always the voice of reason against everything else in that. He's from the Space Quest games. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Let's see. David writes, Prompto from Final Fantasy 15, a goofball that cares about the people close to him above all. Also, he uses humor almost exclusively to hide his real feelings. Yeah.
Cool.
Let's see. Dennis, what does John say?
John says Kirby because I turn into anything that I eat. Oh, wait, no, sorry. No, he says Kirby, actually this is not that far off. Kirby constantly using the situations I encounter in life to adapt, changing on the surface while at heart remaining myself.
That's
see
awesome.
I think it was much deeper
than your answer.
No, I'm pretty sure mine was equal deep, the same deep.
Yeah.
Stomach
equal deep.
Equidip. Yeah.
Equidip. Yeah. Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says a dope fish because I do a lot of dope stuff.
Dope fish from Commander Keen. God, I love that design. That is a very good design.
They very much started with two white squares, and then everything kind of fit in around uh-huh. it.
Yeah. Well, the thing about dope fish is, for as like goofy as he looks, he's absolutely deadly. So I would not want to mess with you because, like, for as funny as he looks. I definitely am getting a little bit terrified looking at this picture of the dope fish.
All of a sudden, staring into your soul.
Yeah, I am 6 years old again playing Commander Keen 4. Jala, what does James say?
James says, I resonate deeply with Maneater Mildred.
Maneater Mildred is it's an NPC invasion in the Souls series. She is somebody who dresses in rags, wears a burlap sack over her head, and usually attacks with some kind of butcher knife.
Yay!
I imagine that James is saying that he's a ruthless, cannibalistic serial killer, but everyone just kind of sees him as this dopey, affectionate character instead.
Yeah, everybody brings him in to beat that boss.
Yeah.
And finally, here, Jonathan writes, probably somewhere between Adam, Jensen, and Geralt. Certain amount of old gruffness and genuine caring. Geralt's a good answer. Yeah.
How how old is Geralt supposed to be? Because that that could continue the trend of old ass men as game protagonists.
I mean, Geralt is, but he's well over 100 years old by the.
Like some timey wimey ageless stuff going on.
Yeah, somebody's gonna correct me. And sure, go for it. But this is a harmless mistake. Witchers tend to age very slowly because of their mutations. If he's not over 100 years old, then he's pushing it.
It's like 100 and cat years or something.
So yeah, something like that. Yeah. you age at whatever rate of the eyes you have. So he has cat eyes, so he ages like a cat. Yeah,
That checks out.
Yep, that checks out. I'm not going to double check that at all.
Hashtag Witcher logic.
Yeah. So I'll do mine. This is a little bit uninspired, but Solaire. Just because he is about working together and doing stuff, outwardly cheery, pretty patient, all things told, in the face of a bunch of stuff, but also has a core of inner despair when dissuaded from stuff. So, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
How is that good? What are you talking about?
That's a good fit. Like, I get that problem.
It's not... I mean, I it's not purely aspirational. There's a little bit of
If you're over 25 and you don't have a core of inner despair, you got to call me and tell me what you're doing. All right.
Yeah.
I don't have a core of inner despair. What's your problem?
clinical depression.
I was talking to Dennis.
If you're not over 25 and are clinically depressed, then you're doing something wrong.
Then you're not paying attention.
Oh, you're gonna make me flip a table on you because you just said a thing about me. There's no escaping, Cole.
Okay. Dennis. Dennis.
Yeah, mine is easy. I am 100% Octodad. I'm stumbling through life being like, really? No one's gonna call me out? Like, no one's told me to like stop that yet? Okay, I guess I'll keep on doing what I'm doing.
Man, I never looked at Octodad as a meditation on the imposter syndrome. but it's right there. It's like right at the top.
It's about as on the nose as you can get, or yeah, whatever octopi have that passes for noses.
Or a beak. It's on the beak.
Yeah. Beak. Pretty on the beak. Yeah, that's definitely me.
Ben, how about you?
Continuing with the self-deprecating answers, I'm going to say the nerd from The Walking Dead season one.
Oh, yeah.
Filled with cowardice, would probably die in that situation. Yeah,
Doug. Yeah, Doug.
Yeah.
Everybody sacrifices you to save the pretty girl.
Ah, pretty good. And then Jala, how about you?
The only one with a healthy self-esteem. Okay,
yes.
So Jean from Lunar 2, she's a strong fighter turned dancer who acts as a mentor and protector of other people, and she always has a positive outlook. Second answer for people who have no idea who that is or what game that is, Samus, because I keep powering up and finding ways to overcome all the new obstacles.
Yeah.
Yo.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you end on the high note.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for participating in that. Those go up on Tuesday afternoons at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. They are posted by Jala and Dennis. And this one, like many others, was suggested by a listener, by our dear secret agent man. We don't know your names, but you know ours.
The Grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. Dennis, you have been away the longest, so I'm going to throw to you first.
Yeah, man, I got a mountain of stuff to talk about. Buckle in and we'll get through it. A lot of it is stuff I'm pretty excited about, though. I'll start with the standbys. Been playing Destiny 2, been playing XCOM 2. Destiny 2 had DLC come out, and I imagine David has talked about it in past weeks.
Yes, yep. Yes.
Yeah, so played through it, enjoyed it. Won't get into all the many missteps surrounding it. That's probably been talked to death. The one big piece is that the new area is partially procedurally generated. And I like that. And it's kind of a really creative way to extend the game and just give a little extra flavor and differentiation, make areas feel less static. So I appreciated that. Nice. And then XCOM 2, I'm trying to remember now the last time I was on the show, I beat Iron Man on the normal difficulty, and I have moved up to hard difficulty Iron Man now.
Nice.
And I had one run that got, gosh, probably 10, 15 hours in, and then squad wiped and squad wiped again and just had no way forward and had to throw the run away, which is the most heartbreaking thing. And I was posting to the Slack at one point, just like, I'm sick to my stomach. Like if I didn't post on Slack about it, I was going to throw a controller or my mouse or something. The game just has a capacity to create incredibly high highs and incredibly low lows. that is a ton of fun. So I feel like I'm getting my feet under me, and I've gotten a little bit lucky. There's every time you start a new Iron Man run, the bonuses you get from each continent are randomized. And then within a soldier's skill tree, there are like some extra skills you'll be able to buy for each soldier, and those are randomized. And I happened to get a couple combinations of skills that, just because of the randomness, I got completely broken combinations, and I'm having a ton of fun on this run with them. So there are two melee classes now with the expansion. One is your typical like sword dude, and he has a special ability that allows him to chain together attacks. But with each successive kill, the attack gets a little bit weaker. So if you kill someone, you get to attack again, but it's a little bit weaker. So you have to plan it out and kind of like stair step your way down in the damage you want to deal. Hmm. Well, the other melee class has an attack that starts out fairly weak, but then powers up as you get kills with it. So as you can imagine, when the chain together kills ability showed up in the bonus tray, I bought it immediately. And because while the damage is supposed to be going down, I'm actually charging it up each turn, I can kill 10 people in a single turn with one dude. It's amazing. Wow. So it's one of those serendipitous things where you know, I got the right combination of skills and I'm just steamrolling people. So that's a lot of fun. Even then, though, you know, the mechanic is built in. Soldiers get tired. You have to kind of pull them all out of the rotation every two missions or so. And that means that I can't always use my overpowered guys. But it is certainly feeling like this. It's my second full run. I have probably five attempts, and just three of them died really early on. But I feel like I've got my feet under me, and I'm getting to that point for the first time on hard Iron Man, where I'm starting to turn the tables on the enemy. So yeah. We'll see. It's still, you know, one bad decision away from having to scrap this run, but I'm feeling much better about it than I was the first. It's Commander is the name of the difficulty Iron Man run.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a ton of fun. There have been more instances of me like screaming into a pillow or being like, yeah, almost standing out of my chair, you know, because of some die roll at the end of the day, you know. It keeps me coming back, and I'm putting a lot of time into that.
Yeah.
So that's XCOM 2. I do not expect to be done playing that anytime soon. That's my big check in, and I'll let you know as other exciting stuff happens. But on to the new stuff.
Okay.
In case you guys have any questions about those standbys.
No, I'm happy to hear your making progress, because like when this thing first came out, it seemed like it was going to be way too hard to do that.
Yeah, it is. It's daunting, but I you know, that's part of the fun of it, is I feel like I'm really getting better at it. I really just asked that question so I'd have some time to drink some water between between sections. So.
Game descriptions. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So I started playing Steven's Sausage Roll.
Oh,
hey!
Came up. Yeah, came up on.
Speaking of hard games,
I don't know about that. Like, I went in with my expectations so high on difficulty level, because everyone's like, "Oh, it's gonna melt your brain," and it is a very awkward system to learn to think around. Mm-hmm. But it has that same arc. I've seen it compared to like learning a language, with other puzzle games. And I think that holds true that, you know, you're learning a new language here, and the inputs and results are very different than you'd expect, and it forces you to kind of think in a different way. But once it starts clicking, and once your mind kind of gets into that box or set of parameters that the game has set for you, it becomes more intuitive than you would think. So it's still counterintuitive.
What world are you on?
Oh, there are worlds?
I've said too much.
So maybe I'm talking after I've let's say it this way. I have cleared out all but one puzzle on the first map that I'm standing on.
Okay.
So that go ahead.
There is a point where there is a noticeable spike in difficulty.
Ah, I see. Okay. Okay.
And it's cumulative.
Oh yeah. What? How so?
No, I based on what I've heard, that spike comes along with some stuff that is just going to stay there forever. And then other stuff is stacked on that too.
Like in math, it's like a jump function where it's like it immediately ramps up to a hard difficulty. And then it's like, oh, okay, I guess I'm with this now.
Yeah.
But
okay. Well, then maybe it'll hit at just the right time. Cause I'm kind of at the point where I'm ready for that to happen. Okay. I think it's very interesting in that you know, you're approaching it. It almost feels like you approach a Rubik's Cube where, you know, you don't exactly see the whole answer at once, but you kind of know the direction that things need to go. And you're like, okay, I see the immediate obvious way that I could cook the sausages. And for anyone who doesn't know, I can't imagine there's too many out there. You're trying to grill sausages and they're like rectangles or they're sausage shaped. Ugh. Face palming myself there. So it's like oblong. They'll only roll a certain direction, and otherwise you can kind of scoot them around, but you need to get the top and the bottom of two segments cooked, and it can only touch the grill once. And then if you touch it again, you've burnt it and you lose. But you kind of, you see the immediate obvious way that it seems like you could grill them, and you immediately count that out because you know it's not that simple. And then you start imagining, you know, other ways that you could potentially do it, but you only see the first part of it, so you do that first part, and then from there you kind of work to the next part, and then you're through. So it's a nice feeling of kind of having a sense of how you might solve it, but it only comes together kind of the next step. You know, you've got enough light for the next step, and then the next step, and you're kind of feeling your way there.
Yeah, kind of like a blind person going through a maze or something. You kind of feel the walls and kind of guide yourself to the exit.
Yeah, and it's very forgiving that they have an undo button that allows you to just take back your moves individually. That what they need is a button that takes you to the last time that you moved a sausage. Because my bad habit is while I'm thinking, I'll like move my guy around the map.
Yeah.
And if I'm thinking about an area, it just helps me to have my guy in that area. But then I'll wind up not touching anything and walk back over to the other side because I'm thinking about that side. And then when I realize I've made a wrong move, I need to hit Z like 300 times to get back to the last time I actually impacted the puzzle.
Yeah.
But it's a ton of fun what I've played so far. Sounds like a difficulty spike is coming, but I'm kind of at the point where that would be welcome. So
are you streaming the game?
I haven't. I should.
Right. Yeah, I would watch.
So, all right. Yeah, I'll start doing that the next time I have it open.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So that's Steven's Sausage Roll. And I'm glad, Ben, that you were so excited to watch me flounder here.
I
will be able to hear your maniacal laughter in the background.
I would never submit myself to that scrutiny.
I mean, yeah, I do enjoy watching people play puzzle games, not to see them struggle, but to see them succeed at, like, through struggling, you know? Like,
yeah. Sure, yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been playing another puzzle game as well, but almost as different as you can get. I've been playing Trine 2.
Yay, oh, yeah. Trine!
Yeah. And Jala, I played this a little bit with you on computer way back in the day, but I'm playing it on PS4 now with Jen. And
Yay!
So two player adventuring. It's a, you know, at its most reductive, it's a 2D platformer where you can swap between three characters. Each has a unique set of powers, and you've got to use it just to get from side A of the map to side B. And there's some light combat involved, but it's really, really traversal puzzles. At its core, and man, that is the most beautiful game. Like, I don't know if they did anything to the PS4 version or if I just wasn't paying enough attention the first time through it, but just everything is very pastels and storybook and larger than life. It's just a real pleasure to look at without ever even touching the controller. And as you walk through the world, it's just really cool to see all the creative and imaginative backgrounds they have. And even in just the first couple of levels, there's been incredible variety going from, you know, a fall kind of pumpkin patch to through a city at night, and then an enchanted garden, and then like a spooky forest. There's a lot of variety, and it's all very, very pretty to look at. I also like that there's really, it feels like there's no wrong way to solve a puzzle. Like you've got to get from point A to point B, and you've got this set of powers. But it feels like almost any combination of heroes or crazy crackpot idea, you can kind of make work to get through. And that's a very hard line for a puzzle game to ride, where it is, you know, it's challenging, but still very open-ended. There's not one right way. At least it doesn't feel that way. And I think that's... Oh, go ahead.
Do they make it if, like, one person gets across, everyone can automatically follow them across? Or does everybody individually...
Mm-mm.
Everybody individually has to get to the other side. And at the end of the day, that's only two characters. Okay. And you kind of pop between them while holding the same place on the screen. But that creates some really funny situations where it's like you're working together and you're doing all this manipulation. You're trying really hard and one person gets up to the ledge and we're like, we did it. Wait, we need to get a second person up there. Oh, okay, now we've got to completely rethink this. And I'm going to switch over to this character because I can manipulate things from far away or, you know, stuff like that. So it requires a lot of conversation and discussion and working together while you're playing versus just kind of sitting next to each other and grinding away. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun from that perspective.
The other question, can you play the single player? Or do you have to do like online co-op or play with somebody else?
There you can play is single player. I don't know how it works. I've never done it. Jolly, you can probably comment.
Yeah, you can play it single player. You just have to switch in between all the different characters, and you have to move them one at a time. So it's a little bit more tedious. It's a lot better if you have other people to play, or at least one other person to play. If you've got at least two people on there, even if you don't have a full party of three, it's still easier to do than trying to do it by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is not so challenging that you can't improvise a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there are moments where you're like, you got to point A one, and you're like, oh, I didn't realize I was gonna, you know, cause this to fall over, and now all of a sudden you're scrambling, but you can still get through, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It sparks a thought going back to Steven's sausage roll. Like, so Trine is so incredibly beautiful and crafted, and it's like, it just. Unattainable is like I could never do something on that level of visual fidelity. But going back to Steven's sausage roll, it is the opposite. Like, it's complete lo-fi experience. Everything is very polygonal and rough around the edges, and there's a visual style to it, but it's a visual style that you know, makes me feel like when I play it, like, yeah, if I had a cool idea for a puzzle game, I could totally make something on this level.
It's like he made programmer art and then just left it there.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what happened. Which, you know, understanding the core of your game and why people are playing, and there's something to that. So, you know, with Steven Sausage Roll, you don't need it to be any prettier. Although I guess Trine 2 shows that there's, you know, there's value inherent in just having a game be pretty.
Yeah.
So those are my two puzzle games that I've been playing. Two quick hits. I've got like 3 weeks built up here, so sorry I'm going long. I started playing Jak and Daxter with Luke and Milo on the couch, and that has been a really fun experience.
Nice.
So awesome. We did a little bit of Super Mario Galaxy with them, and they liked that. Power cells in Jak and Daxter are kind of like the stars in Super Mario, and it's adorable because every time I get a power cell and it does like a little celebration slash saving screen, Luke will turn to me in a panic and be like, it's not over yet, is it? No, it's just a power cell. We're good. We'll keep on. Okay. Oh. And, you know, just every time that there's that, you know, moment, that climax, that moment of triumph, he's worried that it's the end. So I don't know what's going to happen when I get to the final power cell, but for now I just kind of laugh it off.
Yeah, that's pretty funny that he has separation anxiety about this game.
Yeah. just wanting to make sure that there's a little bit more over the course. Like he's like 80% sure, but he's got to check. Yeah. He's got to make 100% sure. I also, not a game, but streaming, I watched the preseason of the Overwatch League pretty extensively.
Hmm.
And their presentation has gotten way better from what you've seen just streamed before. So it's city-based teams. So you've got like the San Francisco Shock and the Philadelphia Fusion and all this stuff. And they've given them custom skins in the game so that everyone on a team is in the same colors, just like you'd see in an actual real-life sport.
Hmm.
And that alone goes such a long way to making the game comprehensible. Like it's a small change, but it makes a world of difference in being able to follow it. They've also gotten way better at the camera work. There's less time spent on Tracer, as I've talked about before, although there's still a lot of time spent on Tracer. And they more regularly do kind of wide angle shots or shots showing the action going on, not attached to a character. So that both of those changes go a long way towards watchability. I'm very hopeful after watching four or five of games across the preseason that it'll be successful and it launches, I think, on January 10th.
Uh-huh.
I'll definitely tune in for the first week and we'll see where it goes from there.
Neat.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear them getting better about that.
Yeah, they are clearly learning, and it's a big investment to create the league like this, and I think they're doing it justice. I just realized I talked up the fact that I was traveling so much and then didn't talk a single Vita game. I bought more new tables in Star Wars Pinball, so the Rogue One table, the Force Awakens table, and then the New Order table, and have played the hell out of all those while I was traveling. Mm-hmm. And then I also bought XCOM Plus for Vita. So as if I didn't have enough XCOM in my life, the original game plus all of the expansions and downloadable content is in a package called XCOM Enemy Unknown Plus.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And I mean, they've got XCOM on mobile phones, for Christ's sake. Of course they have it on Vita.
Yeah.
And that works surprisingly well. The frame rate gets pretty low in places. It almost looks like a claymation film, you know, when there's too much happening on screen at once. But ultimately, that's not what you're playing for.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the full XCOM experience. They use the Vita well. Like, you know, you pinch and drag on the screen to move the camera around. And that works really intuitively.
Right.
You hear the name like Enemy Unknown Plus, and my initial reaction was like, oh, they dumbed it down. They like created some kind of light version for the Vita, but it is the full game.
Plus versions, comma, usually minus.
Yes.
Plus restrictions.
Yeah, plus restrictions.
Plus less. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got two separate XCOM games going at once, both on Iron Man mode.
Healthy.
So I'm you know, it's falling down a deep dark Iron Man pit, but it's all good times.
Cool.
Everybody's doing their individual Iron Man training.
Yes.
Oh man.
That's I just casually dropping it. Oh, you do Iron Man's. Yeah, I do Iron Man's too.
Yep, and then you find your way out of that conversation as quickly as possible.
Oh, what's that, honey? I have to thing. Bye.
I have to make my house not on fire. Bye.
So yeah, whoo. I think that's everything, unless I left something in the dust. But yeah, it's been a fun couple of weeks.
It's fun to hear that your kids like watching Jack and Daxter. That's an important,
oh my gosh, yeah,
an important game for you.
I was gonna have to disown them if not. So.
Come back at Christmas. Where's your kids, Dennis?
Apparently, they liked Ratchet and Clank.
I prefer a series that doesn't have to rely on double entendres in the titles. Thank you.
Let's grow up here. Daxter does like slapstick humor.
Very cool. Yeah. So Jala, how about you?
Okay. Well, as you know, I was busy doing a lot of running. So I played things that are all on my Vita. So, or if not on Vita, then on mobile. So, first thing I played is a game called Koi, which is about koi fish. It's a cute little meditative puzzle game that is on the Vita, and it reminds me, the aesthetic reminds me of Prune, which was the another puzzle game that I played, but I played it on, I think on my iPad, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that one's fun. That's where you have to like clip the right leaves in order to make the branch grow.
Yeah, and then you're like trying to grow the tree in a certain direction around stuff, objects, and whatever. Anyway, that's that game. This game, Koi, you play a little koi fish in a pond, and you solve puzzles to open up lotus flowers and cleanse tainted water and free the light fish, which I guess are kind of like angel fish. Ha ha ha. Anyway, allegedly, the point of the game is supposed to be to save the Earth's aquatic ecosystems, at least according to something I was reading online. So I'm kind of waiting to see if aliens show up like an Echo the Dolphin or something.
Oh.
But anyway, I have not gotten to any of that part. It's a light and relaxing puzzle game that has beautiful, simple graphics and you know, calming, soothing sounds. And it has 8 levels so far. I'm in the first third of the game. So, like, I haven't gotten through enough to know if there really are aliens. Cannot confirm at this point.
They have a little bit of time to show up, but not too
much. Yeah, they have some time to show up yet. So I don't really have anything else to say about that. It's a puzzle game, fish in a pond. That's how that works. The second thing I played was Agent A. Agent A is a spy versus spy adventure game for the iOS and Android, and you play as a secret agent that is assigned to capture an enemy spy who has killed off several other agents and also your boss. And you infiltrate her lair, and she set it up as a trap, basically. And you had to solve a bunch of different puzzles to progress and try to, you know, get yourself out of there and to figure out where she went and all that. And the art style is really cartoonish and has kind of a 60s aesthetic to it. You know, like a asymmetrical, skewed kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
I actually had finished Chapter 4 earlier this afternoon. And there's 5 chapters total, but the last chapter isn't coming out for a few months, and I didn't know that. So it ends on a cliffhanger, and there's a plot twist that is revealed at the end of Chapter 4. And so even though the story is really simple, I'm still just kind of like, oh, and now I have to wait around to see what comes next. And that's kind of like unfortunate, because I will eventually get back to it, but it's just kind of like, damn, and now I gotta, you know, wait for that. And for, if you want to see what that looks like, I posted on social media, so I put the link in the Slack for you guys to show you what the art style looks like. It's a cute game.
Like pastels.
Yeah, it's a cute game. And it's supposed to, the last part is allegedly supposed to be coming out in first quarter of next year, so just a few months away, and then it should be all done.
Yeah.
But I have not gotten to that point yet. So I was hoping to like beat the entire thing and then be like, yeah. And then I finished this game, but then I couldn't. So, and then I got as far as I could in this game. It's just like a point and click adventure game. You pick up objects, you have to do puzzles and things. So, you know, like whatever. Straightforward.
Curious about this.
Yeah, it's a cute game. It's worth playing, but I'm just like, now I have to wait for the rest of it to come out. Of course, when I do play the rest of it, I will bring it up on the show. So yeah. Anyway, the last thing that I played is Corpse Party: Book of Shadows. So this is the sequel to the original Corpse Party, which I think I talked about last episode. I don't remember. Last episode was Grim Fandango. The one before that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm playing it on Vita, but it's also on iOS. I don't know if it's anywhere else. I didn't bother looking. basically, the way that this game is set up is very different. Now, the original Corpse Party is a survival horror adventure game that was made in RPG Maker, so it looks like, you know, an RPG Maker game. This one, however, is set up in a visual novel style point-and-click adventure game. And the movement system is real weird. Here, I'll have to pull up a link to what that looks like, because it's weird. But yeah, so anyway, there are 8 vignettes that serve as prequels and midquels and sequels or even what ifs for, you know, things stemming from one of the wrong ends from the original game that is apparently the actual canon ending, because both of the 2 games that follow are like, you know, following up off of that wrong end, not off of the quote unquote, you know, true ending of the game. So it's really kind of weird. It's kind of weird that way.
I wish the shit wasn't so confusing.
Yeah, like that just makes it kind of confusing that's because like the quote unquote true ending of the game is not like, while it's not ideal, it's still a happier ending than the quote unquote wrong end, you know, is, you know, where this comes from. But the movement in this game is real weird and I can't describe it. But I just dropped an image in the Slack. So, Cole, there's boxes and they tell you what are in the boxes, and it goes by the same layout as the original game. And basically you select where you point to the box that you want to go to, and then it just kind of like moves you around on the map.
It's like a flow chart. Like
a flow chart.
If the school building was represented as a bunch of nodes on a flow chart, and these are just boxes labeled, like, you know, here are a bunch of boxes that say hall, 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 and then over here is the nurse's office.
Yeah. And it's like basically each one of those boxes is like a step in the RPG Maker title. So the actual layout is still the same as the original game. It's just now it's a grid.
Right.
You know,
right.
Basically.
As opposed to walking around like tile by tile around this map.
Yeah. Yeah. But like then what you see on the screen is like visual novel style background that you can point and click, you know, around on the screen. So about the story. It reminds me in a bunch of different ways of Steins Gate, actually, because the canon ending this one that is continued on through these other games involves a time loop and fighting against the outcomes of each series of events.
Okay.
So that's very much along the lines of Steins Gate to me, for pretty obvious reasons.
Uh-huh.
So far I've only finished the first 2 out of 8 total. So they're pretty long. And there's a bunch of different endings that you can get depending upon, you know, what choices you make, or if you pick up this item, or if you don't go to this place or whatever. So, I mean, like, you know, you end up camping out in some of these chapters for a little while. This game, in addition to, like, it does have, like, the visual novel look. It's a point-and-click adventure game, but it also has a darkening meter, which is basically a sanity meter. And as the darkening takes you, which happens when you encounter corpses or have scary experiences or, you know, pass by some creepy ass writing on the wall or read some kind of threatening death note or something, like, yeah, whenever any of that stuff happens, it starts affecting your sanity and you start having hallucinations and begin suffering increasing bouts of paranoia. So that's a thing that happens in this game.
Yeah. So you're still you're still managing a resource.
Yeah, you're still managing a resource. You pick up items and you are actually like automatically pick them up and automatically use them when they are appropriate. Like there isn't an inventory per se where you have to figure out what, you know, dongle goes into what, you know, place.
Dingus.
Or whatever.
Dongles and dinguses.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. We'll go with that nomenclature. But yeah, you can also save anywhere, and there's also a fast forward option. So that means that like replaying to get alternate endings isn't really a big deal, because like even if you save and then you have to skip through a bunch of stuff to get to, you know, the place that you were at when you died the last time, it doesn't take very long to do that.
That's good.
So that's cool. And any time that you have a decision, it stops. It's not like in Steins Gate where you could miss a phone call or a text or something by trying to fast forward. So it's a little bit more convenient than that. There's also a bunch of different bonuses unlocked during the game, including a CG image gallery, a sound gallery of music and voice clips, and also voice actor commentary, which is kind of cool. And you can pull your save data forward from the original corpse party, which allows you to unlock the final vignette without having to get all of the endings. Because apparently to get the last ending, you know, which sets up the third game in the series, you have to unlock everything.
Mm.
So from what I've seen so far, this game gives a lot more screen time to characters from the first game that you didn't see very much of. The first vignette is all about Naomi and Seiko's friendship. Naomi being the main female protagonist and Seiko being, you know, like her, one of her close friends. Mm-hmm. And it also focuses on Seiko's romantic interest in Naomi. And so that's like a thing. So, I mean, like they lay that on like real thick right at the beginning. I'm like, what game am I, playing? Okay. I mean, like, you know, not squeamish, but wait a minute. This was Corpse Party a minute ago. Okay. The second vignette is about Mayu, which is another character from the original game, but also includes a side character that's only seen as a corpse during the main game and for a short time in one of the EX chapters mm-hmm. from the first game, like an extra character that's fleshed out. That's the thing that I really like about the first game is that you come across all these corpses and they're just name tags, right?
Uh-huh.
But then the EX chapters oftentimes will show you what those characters looked like in life and give them a personality and tell you a little bit about what happened to them. And then you're like, oh shit, suddenly you have like a connection to the corpse and it's not just a corpse with a name that happened to die in a terrible way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But basically what Book of Shadows does is it functions as a sort of expansion that tells a lot of the backstory. This might be cool, except for the fact that what that also means is the pacing is just non-existent, because if you're playing this one, that means you already played the first one, so you know at least the overall result of what's going to happen
right.
in each of these things. Like, you know what characters are dying and how they're going to die and all that stuff. And while this game does flip-flop a little bit, it doesn't flip-flop enough to make the pacing even be a thing, you know?
So, yeah.
I mean, like, it's just like extra information. It sort of feels like somebody's writing fan fiction about it and just telling you all these other stories that happened around the main events. It kind of feels like that in a way.
You're not doing a very good job at selling this, Jala.
No, I'm not. And here, let me I'm not done complaining about it yet. So here's another thing. It's giving me start of Resident Evil 7 vibes, which I'm not down with. That is to say that there are a bunch of totally new ways to die in here, which are just as gruesome as in the first game. So if you keep on getting wrong endings, it leans so much into that shock horror, because the psychological stuff was already established in the first game because you didn't know what was coming in the first game. But now you know. So it's just the only way to create that horror is, you know, how can we shock them,
yeah.
you know, with the newest death or whatever. So that's unfortunate. So the thing is, I'm reserving judgment about this because I'm only a quarter of the way through.
Yeah.
But so far, like I said, it feels more like, you know, just a bunch of backstory and a bunch of exposition and, you know, things like that, more so than a sequel. From what I've skimmed on the wiki about it, though, there's actually storyline progressions that are made somewhere. Okay. I just haven't gotten to that part yet. There's stuff that happens in here that advances the plot line from where it's at currently. Right now, they're just kind of still in the setup phase, is right. my understanding.
Well, like, so this leads directly into Blood Drive, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Blood Drive happens after the repercussions of this game. So there is action that happens that is unique just to this game, but I have not gotten to that part yet. All I have played is the first couple of chapters, which is just, you know, telling you a little bit about, you know, what's been going on with some of these characters. And like Mayu, for example, you don't even really see much of her character, you know, in the first game. And in this game, she has an entire chapter.
Hmm.
So you get to see a lot more about her. So if you were interested in that character, this, you know, backtracks and tells you what happened before they ended up in this horrible situation. And then everything that happens with her as she's going around trying to find everybody and figure out what's going on. So,
yeah.
Like, we'll see. I'm not convinced that it's going to be like absolute trash. Otherwise I'd just be like, okay, I'm just going to set it down.
Yeah.
But so far, like, I'm like, okay, but I'm not as into it by yeah. any stretch of the imagination as I was the first game. Like
you were real into the first game.
I was really excited about the first game, and I definitely recommend that. This one I don't want to recommend yet until I actually have finished it.
Right.
I want to see, you know, what happens and how everything pans out. And, you know, I'm sure it'll eventually pick up. It might be one of those things where, like in Steins Gate, where it just takes a while to get to the, you know, get revved up. And then once it's revved up and going, then, you know, it takes off from there. And I'm hoping that's what happens with this one, that they're just having like a kind of glacial pace middling around in the beginning to give you one sort of feel, but then they just drop you on your ass later. I'm hoping that's what happens, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the only other thing I played.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it turns around.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do, because like I also have the other game waiting for me. So I, mean, like, I want to.
It doesn't sound like the other game like falls into this trap of being like the Corpse Party contracts, you know, like, you know, Hitman contracts or whatever. Like, it sounds like the other one is a proper story as opposed to being the, you know, the empty space in between where the story already happened.
Yeah, it's kind of like what I'm kind of envisioning this as is Corpse Party 1.5, you know, and then Blood Drive is like 2. So, but we'll see. Blood Drive does not appear to have the same issue, so it may just be that this is a weak entry in the series, but it may not be weak at all. It may actually pick up and be, you know, really awesome later on. I have not seen it yet.
Yeah.
So, we'll see later.
Hmm. Cool. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got only a couple. A small one I picked up. I picked this up on the Steam sale, but I started playing the Banner Saga. Did Denna played this one?
Yeah, I've played it. I haven't finished it, but I've played it.
Gotcha. Have either of you guys played it, Charlie or Cole?
No, it's a thing that's been like floating around that people have played that I have like, I think I even have it downloaded. I don't know, but it's backlog. It's backlog.
Yeah. Same.
That's basically what it was on mine too. I was basically trying to chip away at the backlog. It's a pretty interesting game. I can't even remember the story behind it. I know it was developers from a larger company that broke off and made this game together.
It was a Kickstarter game.
Who is it?
It was funded on Kickstarter. Like they were part of that first big wave.
Okay. Do you remember? For some reason, I thought the developers came from a larger company, but maybe I'm misremembering.
Formerly from BioWare.
Okay, that's the ticket. All right, cool. So yeah, it's a pretty like minimalist game in terms of like there's like basically a dialogue system similar to like Knights of the Republic or something like that where it'll switch back between people. You can pick choices. They don't have a huge impact on your character progression. Some of them have impact on like kind of what you do, like sort of moral choices of like who you fight essentially, or maybe kind of how you initialize the fight that you have. So that's kind of interesting, but it's kind of like a Norse-esque story. There's these giants who exist, and there's like maybe three different races. So it's kind of like Tolkien-esque a little bit too. But there's two different tribes that you play as at the beginning of the game, who are both like marching across the world towards one another, not in any sort of adversarial way or anything, just coincidentally. But one group of people has like, I guess both groups of people have these things called, they're Jarl, I think. They're like these giants, essentially. They're like twice the height of humans, and then in terms of the battlefield, they take up a 2x2 square instead of a 1x1 square.
Wait a minute, that's four times as big as humans.
So twice the height, maybe something times the width. Okay. I guess it's just two.
And infinity more horns.
Yes, 2/0 the horns of a person. So part of the game is you just kind of like walking along the road and having like conversations with people. The actual like meat and potatoes of the game is it's kind of like a puzzle fighting game, where it's like you're on a grid system and it ping pongs back and forth between your turn and the opponent's turn. And on your turn, you have a queue of people that you go through. So all of your fighters, you know, take their turns one at a time. But if there's like a difference in the number of fighters, it's kind of like this weird out of sync sort of thing. Like if I have five people and they have three people, their people will get turns more often than my people, which could be a good or bad thing. And so there's this kind of weird system where you're trying to navigate your people so that they don't get surrounded by the other people and get like brutalized, and you kind of like set up kind of like a wall, and then you have, you know, some people are ranged attackers like archers, some people can attack at weird angles like pikemen, and then other people just attack with swords like up close. So it's kind of like an interesting system. I don't have my head completely wrapped around it yet, but it's interesting so far. I haven't like fallen in love with it or anything, but mm-hmm. it's interesting. So I guess I'll put it that.
But like at its core, it is a turn-based, grid-based strategy game, right?
Yeah. It does not like have the maybe like the depth of like XCOM, or it's not as like complicated as something like that. There's some interesting things there in terms of like there's like this one sort of so you're moving, there's a certain cost associated with that. Like you can only move a certain amount of distance. You're attacking, there's, you know, like whatever. They have a system where it's like defense and like your heart or your vitality or whatever, and you can attack either one of those things. If they have a lower defense, then that means you can attack like their vitality, it'll do more damage. So there's kind of like a weird trade-off of like, well, I could just keep brute forcing his vitality, or I could do the defense for one round and then attack his, like, he'll be weaker or more able to be attacked, I guess, the next round. So it's kind of like a risk reward there. The other interesting thing is your health is directly related to how much damage you do. So if somebody like wails on you and you only have a little bit of health, you also only have a little bit of attack. So you're not like really that good in battle, and you kind of want to back away.
Right.
And so then it's kind of interesting too, because like who, you know, do you want to take all their, you know, person out and then focus on another person, or do you want to just weaken someone so they're not really doing anything, but then they still take up a turn in your opponent's slot, and so that way, you know, like you kind of have an advantage maybe. I don't know. So there's kind of interesting trade-offs there. In addition, there's kind of this overriding economy, I think it's called like willpower or something like that, where it's this kind of like fluid economy that you can add to any of these actions that you're doing. So for example, you can move a certain amount, or you can move one or two spaces beyond that and pay one or two willpower on top of that. And each person has like a variable amount of it. Some people might only have like one or two, and some might have like six or seven. So their strategy is like heavily based on it.
Yeah.
And then you can also use that same economy when you're attacking to do like one or two extra damage to whatever type it is. So that's kind of like another interesting mechanic going on with it. Hmm. So kind of interesting. I'm not like completely sold on it yet, so it's still kind of I'll keep playing it a little bit, but I'm not like hooked or anything yet. So
well, you have the sequel to move to after this, so
exactly, yeah, that's out as well. I don't know what the order of operations should be. I don't know if I should go play that and see if it gets better and then just play that, or I don't know. So I don't know.
How do you feel about the choice-based storytelling that happens between battles?
So there's only one of them I got to see a couple of the different permutations to, where you start like a war, quote unquote, like you send all your guys at all of the bad guys or whatever, and it says like, should you do formation, should you do charge, should you do like be careful or whatever, and so you have a couple different options of what you do. And so I did two options with that. I did formations, one I did charge, and the interesting thing about that is that dictated the starting positions of your characters relative to the enemies, and it changed how many enemies there were. So like if you do the charge one, you have a harder battle where you start in the middle and the enemies are surrounding you, but you will save more people. This like giant tribe that you're walking with, you know, you're walking with like hundreds of people or whatever, you'll save more of them if you survive that battle. Whereas if you do formations, more of your people will die, but when you fight these people, you're in a more advantageous position where you're surrounding them instead. So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, overall, it doesn't seem to make a huge difference yet. So I don't know. And like, it doesn't feed into your stats at all. So it's okay, I guess, so far. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think of it, Dennis?
Yeah, I liked that layer to it, that you're kind of almost managing this macro size of your tribe. There are also some pure like story beats where it's like, oh no, someone's about to fall off a cliff. Do you, you know, yell at them to watch out, or do you dive to save them? Or like, you know, so and so appears. Do you trust them, or do you tell them that you're angry at them, or whatever?
Yeah.
And I haven't played through any of them multiple times, but there's almost for each little story segment, there's two beats. There's like an initial, you know, choose A or B, and then there's a check-in, like you still A or you still B. And most of the time you're like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I was playing one character to be like, okay, he's going to be as antisocial as possible. So every time I was like, screw you. And then I was like, you really want to be mad at him? And I was like, yeah, screw you. And generally, as long as I doubled down on the first option I chose, things worked out, you know?
Okay.
But the one time that I waffled and I like started being really aggressive and it was like, okay, stuff is starting to go down. You still want to be aggressive? And I was like, well, maybe I'll back off. It got a character killed.
They all die. Yeah.
So it's almost like I felt I was very gun shy about like role playing any changes of heart. I went into every story encounter completely made up on what I was going to do and did not deviate from it for fear of losing another character. Because the person that died, it was not just a story person. It was like a playable character.
Oh, wow.
I lost. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm worried about too. So I know I did one battle where like all my people died, but I think you just lost like people in your troop and you still have those people. They're just injured. I quickly exited that game hoping it wouldn't save. So we'll see. I don't know. Yeah. How far did you make it, Dennis, in your playthrough?
I don't want to spoil anything. Shit started to get really, really bad.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. So scary to know. Things have not gotten bad yet. So I'm probably ways off from where you are. So I don't know. I don't know how much I'll keep going in it, but I'm ready to move on to the next game. Do you guys have any questions about Banner Saga?
No. I listen to its soundtrack a lot.
Okay. Right on. The next game is one that I was inspired to play by watching a stream over weekend. I saw Allison play it. So I started playing The Evil Within 2.
Oh, dang.
Having not played The Evil Within 1 at all. But
you don't have to.
Yeah. It seems like it's a pretty standalone game. I mean, there's references to the first game, but it doesn't seem... It seems pretty user-friendly that it, like, they kind of explain, you know, some of the tidbits of what happened.
Yeah. that you're in the murder tub. Yeah.
Yeah. it's pretty awesome though so far. I've played it for about 4 hours. I haven't even bought the game yet. I've only played the demo so far.
Oh wow.
But this is like the best demo that I've played because the demo is just here's the game. We're gonna cut you off at this chapter. If you want to keep playing the game, then you can buy it. If you don't want to play it, then you don't have to. You know. So I haven't gotten to the point where they cut you off yet. They cut you off at chapter 3, and I'm like at chapter 3, but not at the end of it. But man, it's so far it's been really cool. I was surprised by it when I was watching Allison's. Playthrough of it where it's like it's a very like densely packed world. The bulk of the game the bulk of the beginning of the game, you're just in this map and you're exploring this map, and they it's kind of like a neighborhood. It's kind of maybe a style that's similar to like Twin Peaks or Alan Wake is like some of the references people said that kind of stand up. It's like very pine tree type area, but it's a very like small town. But it's like every house is like a different event or present that you're kind of opening up, or like a different roller coaster you're kind of going on, where it's like this is going to be, there's going to be something going on here. It might just be a mini fight or something that you just experience. It might be introducing like a new monster and how to defeat it. It could be something completely out of left field, kind of like Saints Row style, where it's like, here's this completely new game element we're going to throw at you that's pretty fun and interesting. So far I've really enjoyed it. I've only played at the one map, and they have a semi interesting like level up system. They have a weapon leveling up system that's very similar to Resident Evil 4, which is a system that I really loved. Where it's like you have kind of one economy, and you choose how to spend it. You can either upgrade like firepower versus how fast your gun fires versus like the amount of ammo it has. So that's kind of interesting. I pretty much always do firepower in situations like that, but there's some guns that kind of give you reason to up like ammo or something like that. Like the shotgun starts off with a small amount of ammo, so upgrading that.
Critical chance and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then one thing that's interesting is so there's like regular weapon parts that upgrade your weapons, and then there's kind of like every weapon has kind of like three tiers to it. And to get to the next tier, there's like a critical weapon part where if you find that somewhere on the map, then you can unlock that. And they have a similar system for your player that they do for the weapons, where there's like five different things you can upgrade. They're all kind of gated by this like critical element, which is like red goo versus green goo, which is a weird economy. I've only found one critical upgrade so far. I found one red goo in one spot about 3 hours in or so. So that's like an interesting progression. Like I'm glad that they're kind of like slowly ramping you up with that. I don't know if they'll have a satisfying payoff as like Resident Evil did with having like an overdrive kind of feature when you upgrade the guns all the way. But I haven't got to that point, so I can't verify that. Just kind of judging it based on the tree that they show you so far. But yeah, so the system, it's kind of like you're fighting like zombie-esque people. It's a similar thing as like kind of Resident Evil where your ammunition's somewhat sparse, so you have to definitely do headshots. And the other thing that's kind of interesting is you're pretty much limited to the ammo that you have in your guns. There's like not, if you have like a swarm of people you're fighting, there's not really enough time to reload. So it's basically the amount of people you can kill in all of your guns one clip through. So
reloading only happens between fights.
Pretty much. You might be able to sneak one in pretty quickly, but if you have like two or three people running at you, then it's really hard to do that. I don't know how much more to say about it. It's a really pretty game. The graphics are really amazing on it, I think. So that's like another thing that sold me on it. The story, it's like so, you have a kind of like a strong, gruff, silent type character for your main character. So he looks like a less cleaned up version of like Leon from Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
He's definitely like the dark and stormy protagonist though. So it's, I don't know. It's not like,
I just want my kids back. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. He's the Tom Jane of this world.
It's the same character from the first game. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Is it? It's Sebastian Castellanos.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Here's my question for you.
Sure.
How much is there in the way of bullshit instant death?
Not much. There's like a
Hooray!
Couple. The only walls that I've hit so far is like there's one part where it's like you walk to one area, there's a triggered event where you have to fight like four or five people, and it's like, and at that time I did not have the ammo or resources to do it, so I just walked the different path and it didn't trigger, and so that's fine. Like, so you can kind of avoid, you can kind of choose where you go and who to fight, and like at any point in time you can run back to like a safe zone if you want, and it's not a big deal.
That's good.
Because you start in a corner of the map and you're kind of like going on kind of individual recon missions to any part that you want to, and then you're running back to the base to kind of like heal up, make more bullets of whatever you need at like workbenches, upgrade your stuff, so even worst case scenario, if you get killed by something, it's kind of like Dark Souls thing where it's like, okay, just go a different direction, like you'll probably be fine that direction.
Nice.
So I haven't found it to be too difficult yet. The first few people you fight, like you like really have your wits about you and you're like, okay, if I make a mistake I'll die, and that might be true, but once you kind of get your feet under you and kind of get competency over like shooting people and like how to handle people, it's like not a big deal if you like trigger people and like they hear you, or if two or three people, you can handle them. Basically the point where you can handle them comes when you get the shotgun, because that can handle people. But
I don't know, the skeleton key.
I don't know, I'm having a lot of fun with it so far. I played it for about 4 or 5 hours yesterday, so I'll probably pick it up and play it. I don't know. So here's the thing is, I'll definitely keep playing it and then see where the demo point is. And then I don't know if I'll go for the $6 buy or not, or the, mm-hmm. or maybe wait until Christmas and see if it drops in price at all and then buy it then.
It will. I got it for $30 over Thanksgiving. Like, this is a game that will be on sale.
Gotcha. Okay. Then I will probably do that. Oh, so you already have this game, Cole?
Yes.
Have you been playing it?
No.
What have you been playing?
Don't put this on me.
playing emotional scarring from the first game.
Jolly gave me all kinds of shit when I slunk into the Hex Crank channel and said, "Hey guys, I got Evil 1 than 2."
Yeah. I was like, don't you even talk to me about Danganronpa 2 being my thing, and if I ever happen to play that game, don't you talk to me.
I never told you to play that. I never told you
no,
to play that.
No, I'm saying, like, you were giving me shit when I was like, I have Danganronpa 2 on, like, a memory card on my Vita for some reason, and I don't know why. I have no recollection of buying it, and you're like, don't play the thing, and I'm like, well, I might play the thing, and you're like, but why? Yeah,
but don't play the thing.
I wasn't, but then you told me not to.
Yeah, well, then you start. Yeah, exactly. And then like you're like, oh my god, freaking out about the first Evil Within and like breaking down on stream about it.
That wasn't breaking
and then like
down.
Why?
Come on.
Yeah, yeah, okay, whatever.
I am happy that like sequels can be more successful than their predecessors.
Absolutely,
like thinking of like The Witcher 3 and like perhaps this one as well, where it's like you don't, they're making games that they're still accessible even if they're sequels, mm-hmm. and they can still be really good games.
Yeah, like series can get better. Like they don't have to run out of ideas; they can get new ones.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. So the only game that I have to play that I've been playing that I could talk about here is Siren Blood Curse, which I played for I played for the stream. Man, I really wanted to like this game, guys, because like in a lot of ways, it represents a lot of the stuff that I love about survival horror. You know, like. Yes, it is. It's a scary game, but it is full of all these like great ideas, like so many awesome little scenarios. Like the story doesn't make a goddamn lick of sense when you're playing it, but like I went and read, and I was like, oh, so that's what's going on. Like, and in spite of all my frustration, I want to go back and play it again and get like those little like collectibles to flesh out the story because there's some really cool shit happening in this. But I think it's too frustrating to play. And I was perfectly happy playing that on a stream over the course of 24 hours because I had nowhere to go, really. People like, I don't understand how you have the patience for this. Like, well, where am I going to go? You know? But also I was like taking breaks in between the episodes to go, to play Jackbox, right? To, yeah. to hang out with people. And that was a good strategy. So the tight synopsis of this is a remake of the original Siren game for PlayStation 2, made by a lot of the people who made the original Silent Hill, who then went on to make Siren. They made three Siren games and then strangely went and did Gravity Rush. So like it's that team, a very strange left turn for them. but this is like a combination survival horror and stealth game. Where the primary mechanic happens to be that you have the ability to see through the eyes of other people and monsters in the world. Okay? So
it's called eye-jacking, right?
It's called sight-jacking.
Oh,
like you're hijacking their sight. And this is...
Hijacking is considered offensive.
Yeah. it's actually a really cool idea, and it makes the game very visually interesting. And brings out this sense of like really needing to understand the space, you know, because like on one split screen, you have your person like holding onto their head and like you see the camera swiveling around to like look at whoever you're seeing through the eyes of. And then on the other panel of the split screen, you're seeing what they see and you're like watching their movements and then figuring out when it's safe to move or when it's safe to, go up and attack them, you know, when they're facing the other way or whatever. And they use that in very inventive ways throughout. The problem is because it's a stealth game and because, you know, it is kind of its vintage, they really enjoy disempowering you to a very frustrating degree, to the point where a good number of the chapters that you're playing as a very young girl. This is a thing that horror games do very frequently. As a way to kind of justify instant death. However,
children just can't take hits like adults can.
No. Well, but children just can't get within 10 feet of these monsters like adults can. Because at
least. Roy Moore.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I can make the joke because the news broke. And anyway.
Wait, what news broke?
Apparently they're projecting that Jones won.
Oh, great. Cool. Knock on wood. I don't want to jinx that, but cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully that man does not get anywhere near
power.
Office or children.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. What a fucking lunatic. Anyway.
Not to sidetrack us. Continue.
Yeah, not to sidetrack us. No, but yeah, like you just you end up dying an awful lot because like a monster will get too close to you. You didn't realize they were there. The little girl starts to, you know, crouch and cower, and then all of a sudden you have to restart. Fortunately, the missions are quite short, and once you figure out what you have to do, you can execute them pretty quickly. It's not a very time-consuming game to play, except when you are trial and erroring your way through, like a lot of people saw me doing. When you are playing as, you know, a fully grown, capable person, the first step in any given mission is to, like, find a weapon. And that runs into another problem with this game, which is it is very, very, very dark.
I'm just going to channel my inner Money Smith and say that's my first step in anything.
Right. but like it sucks because you can't really find anything in the world. You know, like, and I was like, it was to the point where I was going into the settings for my capture card and bumping up the brightness of what it was displaying to me personally so that I could like interpret what was happening in the world.
Oh, huh.
Right. Or going into the, you know, to the games menu and playing around with that, like it's just not something I would have expected I would have to do is like mess with those settings in order to make the game playable. So yeah, like I feel that it is the in a lot of ways, it was the perfect game for me to stream because people often come to me and say like, or, you know, come to me, say something to me online, like, oh, I would never play this in a million years, but it's fun to watch somebody play that because they get to take all the frustration and I get the cool stuff off the back. Like I get to watch the crazy cutscenes. I get to see the weird like time loop and people transforming into bug monsters and stuff
with guns.
Yep. Yeah. And also the crazy ending that takes place inside of a fractal.
Yeah, like that was some tripped out Doctor Strange movie kind of shit going on. I was just like,
but like the okay. Like the very end of that was just so off the wall. Like you're getting magic katanas that slash beams of holy fire and stuff like that. You're inside of a fractal fighting an incredible crash test dummies bug. You know, on and on down the line. So like. It was a success. I was frustrated, but like I kind of want to go play the original, you know, and see how that pans out. I have it. It's on the PSN store for PS3. You can just play it as a PS2 classic. But yeah, I'm more interested in the ideas that are presented than anything else.
Would you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down for somebody else to play it?
Yeah, 7 out of 10.
That they don't have a stream watching them play it at the time.
No, no. I would say avoid it. I would say find a Let's Play, read a summary or a synopsis because, like maybe even not that because like the sense of being completely disoriented by the story is definitely a big part of it. Like you're playing as these people who are trapped in this Japanese town that is. Kind of dislocated in time and space. It is flooded with and being rained on by this red water. And it is full of kind of like regular townspeople who are zombified versions of themselves, sometimes turning into these bug-like monsters the longer they stay mutated and kind of going throughout these kind of shadows of their daily routines in a lot of ways.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So that ending, the music for the end boss too, was really something. At first, everybody was like, what the hell is this? And then it started growing on everybody while we were just staring at the weirdness going on screen.
The music in this is great. Like I definitely yesterday acquired a copy of the soundtrack for it. I would say the music is the best part of it.
Well, cool.
Speaking of music, did you get the music I sent to you, Cole?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Cool. So that's Siren Blood Curse. That's all I've been playing. Danganronpa 3 continues apace, but I have nothing new to say about it just yet.
Cool.
Yeah. Any other questions about that?
I just want to say thanks for playing the stream and playing a game for 24 hours with a few gaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, along with that, thanks to both Jeremy Greer, Autumn Greer, and Allison Baker for coming in and relieving me so I could go sleep. That makes all of the difference in the world for making that kind of shift possible. So big ups to them and big ups to the people who watched, offered encouragement, and donated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
That's how it should end.
Yep.
Yeah,
it is. Cough from Cole.
Me coughing quietly off mic. Yeah. Oh man. So thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate it. If you want to help spread the word, this is a good time as people are traveling. They're going to be listening to stuff, and you say, "Hey, I know you. You like video games and hearing people talk. How about this?" Help us spread the word. That is the only way we can grow. Also, leave us a rating or review on iTunes. Would really help us out. If you would do that and mention Jala. Everything mentions the guys, and we need to have one that mentions Jala. But you know, the Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and otherwise, just come back next week and let me take a moment and panic and think, okay, we'll be back next week. It's the week after that, the week of Christmas, that we're not going to be doing something.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So cool. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Don't think so.
Wish Jala luck on her Santa run.
Yeah, I'm doing that next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't let Santa get you.
I am Santa. Yes.
It's like a zombie run. There's a bunch of Santas chasing you the entire time. The
Santa's no, everybody is Santa, and we are all running together.
Oh, that's just a way to hide the real Santa.
Yeah. Indeed.
Cool. Well, come back next time. And until then, I am Cole Ross. And you can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia, and you can find me on Twitch, hopefully streaming Stephen's sausage roll, at GreenLaser73.
I'm Jalachan in places, and hopefully now that I have a hardwired connection, I can start streaming too. Ooh. But I'm in that place also as Jalachan, because guess what? All the places.
Yeah.
I'm Ben Merkel, and you can find me watching Dennis's stream of Stephen Sausage Roll at Green Laser.
And just typing in, like, interesting move. I don't see a lot of people do that. Huh.
Yeah. Interesting choice.
I mean, what we should do, Ben, we should get you and I on a Skype call together where you can just give me live commentary.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I would have a panic attack. And stick around for some titles. Were you saying something, Jala? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I was just going to say, there's too much delay. That can't happen.
Oh, yeah. So Twitch.
Could live do it then over Christmas break, perhaps.
Yeah, there you go. That's better.
Yeah. Who has titles?
I have titles. A few.
Jala.
Confetti Monster. And then I also have Confetti Tester, because that's what you said after the first one. But okay. I prefer Confetti Monster,
as do
personally.
I.
And then also Equidepth.
Okay. Ben?
I got, it's kind of a long story, but it's my fault. Okay. I got Midquels.
What?
Midquels.
Like sequels, prequels, midquels.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I got plus restrictions.
Okay. Dennis?
It's good. I had Confetti Tester and Equidepth.
Okay. I don't have any because I'm a terrible person. I didn't write
You're
any
tired
down.
And sick.
That's true.
Yeah. I like Confetti Monster. That didn't get the most votes, but I like Confetti Monster.
Well, I think it's of the...
What's that?
Yeah,
do it.
It tied for the most votes.
Oh, Confetti Tester and Equidepth did, but I like Confetti Monster better.
Confetti Monster is better.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Do it.
Done.